today. So that we'll you know continue with and finish with on Tuesday, and then I want to speak about the I think we said the topic of Gerkatan we would do. I may speak say a few more words about Kinu Yustira also because we did that quickly on our way to Shavya, so maybe a few more words about that just to fill in the wrapping up of Shavya. But then to so I'll give some I'll probably send you a list on but you can already start doing the sugya of. Gerkatan, that's the sugi here on Daf Yud Aleph Amid Aleph, because again, Yud Amid Aleph and Yud and base parts we did pretty much. Let's see, maybe we'll add a few things there too. But I definitely want to get in Gerkatan, so that's the starting from the Mishnah on Yud Aleph Amid Aleph. You know, through the next Mishnah, this whole Shakra Vitaria from Yud Aleph Amid Aleph, from Mishnah to Mishnah, and of course there really are two. Big issues to think about. One is Zachin, you know, which comes up here. I'm not sure if we're going to do that fully or not, but Zachin Ladim Shalom Bafanav, and the relationship between Zachia and Shlichos, and what do we mean when we say Zachia Mitam Shlichos, and what do the Rishonim mean when they say Zachia Zlav Mitam Shlichos. It seems like neither of them necessarily mean, you know, exactly what they say. So what really is the difference between Zechia Mitam and Shlom Mitam Shlichus? That comes up obviously in this big Tosas here, and in the Sugya in Bav Metzia Daf Ayin Aleph, if you want to start working on it. And then of course the question of objective schus and subjective schus. That's one part. And of course the other part is the question of Kabbalah Sol Mitzvos, which is a huge conceptual issue and a huge practical issue. What is the status of Gerkatan? Is it Doraisa, is it Darabanan? How could you have such a thing you know, without Kabbalah, without a serious Kabbalah Sol Mitzvos? So again, if you want to just start, I'll give you a list, but you know, the Tosas and Sanhedrin, Daf Samaches, and the Riva and Rabbeinu Kreskes here on Yod Aleph Amid Aleph, and the Ramban and Shabbos, Tosas and the Ramban and Shabbos on Ayin Beis Amid Aleph. So we'll discuss that, and then in general we'll talk about the relationship between the various requirements of Geirus, Bila, Tvila, Hartzah, Sadamim, and Kabbalah Sol Mitzvos in particular. You know, are these equal requirements or not? And if not, what do we mean by that? Okay, so that's the next topic, and we'll, you know, try to do that. Hopefully it won't take too much time. Then I said I wanted to get back to fill out some of the Birkas Hasanim issues, so I'm going to try to do that too. Okay, so we had a couple shiurim on Shavya Nafshei Chaticha Yisura. So far, basically, I see there's some people who weren't here before, caught up. But just what we've done so far is we went through the Shaka Vitaria. We noted that there seems to be a debate. Both in the Babli and the Yerushalmi and the way the Rishonim and some of the layers in Shita Mekubetzes, how they interpret some of the you know, the scope of Shavya Nafshei Chaticha D'Yisura, you know, how far does it go, what does it apply to? And specifically, again, I want to repeat everything we discussed, but specifically Rashi seemed to take a very specific and narrow stand right at the beginning of the sugya by telling us that Homer Pesach Pasoch Matasi Nema La Osra Al Bala is just that. It's limited to La Osra Al Bala. It doesn't really apply to other things, including Suva. And then Rashi on Tesson and Base, when he talks about the Din of Shmuel, Shmuel seems to apply Pesach Pasoch Matasi to Suva as well. This was stuff that we did already, so just a quick reference. So Rashi says, it seems to want to say that that's not connected to Shavya Nafshei, that's connected to the Gemara on Yud Amid Aleph, you know, the Chazaka Ein Adam Toreach Besuda Umafsida. So the Gemara never, you know, introduced that yet. So it's methodologically strange for Rashi to be reading, you know, the Gemara on Tesla and Beis in light of Yud Amid Aleph, but it seems like Rashi intentionally was trying to avoid the conclusion that Shavya Nafshei per se could have impact on Ksuva. On the other hand, Bali Tosas don't seem to be doing that, and it's not foolproof, but certainly Tosfos on Tesfos and Beis is discussing which is more obvious, Hefsek Suva or Isur Labala, and you just don't get the impression, you know, that they're motivated like Rashi to remove this from the sugya of Shavian Al Shechatikat Yisra. So, but let's assume for the moment that it is explicit in the later material, the Shittabuk Betzes, that you know, there's at least a view, if not a dominant view, that Shavian Afsha would have impact not only on Les or Isha Albala, but also on Lahaksida Suvasa. The reason that that's very, very important is because the bigger question that we've been dealing with is how does Shavian Afsha Chaticha Di Isura really, really work? Is it mostly in the realm of Schaibus? In other words, we don't believe it necessarily because it doesn't meet the threshold, the objective threshold of what constitutes halachic proof, and therefore we dismiss it, you know, in terms of its veracity. That doesn't mean it didn't happen, but we don't have sufficient evidence that it did, and therefore halachically it falls short, and therefore objectively, you know, we don't believe it. The only thing is that shavinat shechaticha diisura, meaning there's a kind of a neder, implicit neder, hischaibus, something of that sort. So we understand that if it's something in that realm, even though we tried to fine tune it, and I'll just, sum that up very quickly also, but we understand that if it's basically about this person's own, you know, spiritual world, or maybe not even spiritual world, their own, you know, a world, so obviously the impact on others, you know, should be limited. The only way you're going to really justify a spillover effect, if you're dealing with a kind of a skybus, and if you're arguing that the objective evidence isn't sufficiently compelling, is to say that there's an interaction or like an interconnection or interrelationship between, on a factual level, on a de facto level, in other words, between different institutions. In other words, if you can be mischayev yourself to A, and the factual consequence of A, right, ends up affecting B and C, so then B and C are going to be affected by your hischaibus. But not because per se your hischaibus is you know, objectified in terms of belief, but just because there's an interconnection, there's a certain, you know, grayra, if you will. You know, one thing just happens to lemaisa impact, you know, on the other. So the ripples here are pragmatic de facto ripples, not common denominator, let's say, or more objective, you know, applications. These are not applications, these are just, you know, technical consequences because of the intertwined interrelationship between things. But then you have to figure out, and it's harder to justify those, you have to explain what the connection is. With regard to Ksuva, that's an interesting issue. That's what we mentioned, the view of the Shach, you know, in Tak V'Kohen. In general, when the Riachronim mostly dealt with the question, how can you ever be mafsid Ksuva, for example, on the basis of chazakas and robes, etc., and it seems that sometimes we are, what about the rule of Ein Hocha B'mamon Achar Harov? So various answers are given, you know, to these to this question. We discussed it earlier in the year, right? Some people say Ein Hocha B'mamon Achar Harov is an exception, not the rule. That's one of the views of Bali Tosis. Others will tell you that whenever there's a shtar involved, you know, shtar omid likbos kegavui dami, which is really Beis Shammai's view. We don't hold that way. We hold like Beis Hillel, but apparently there are Rishonim already, the Ramban and others, and then the Ksos of Shmaitza really, you know, expanded this a lot, who suggests that even Beis Hillel, who holds shtar omid likbos, you know, it's lav kegavui dami, but with regard to some issues, thinks it's kegavui dami. That's having a shtar, you know, changes the muksakos, you know, because of the shibudim or because of the cheskas chiyuvim. You know, it's what's the default and what's the change. Again, this is not our topic right now, but really these are some of the approaches. Another possibility relating to what we talked about in the very beginning of the year is that shiny ksuva, that the ksuva itself, though it expresses itself in dine mamonis, is really an outgrowth of the relationship between husband and wife, and it's kiyum in the ishus. And I wanted to be medayik this earlier in the year in the discussion of the Ramban and the Ran and Daf Yud Amud Aleph, again, which was sometimes Kore Lamafreya. And if that's the case, so then, you know, the whole question of, you know, Hochim B'mamon, Ksuva expresses itself in Mamon, but it isn't about the money, and therefore it's, you know, maybe it's determined, you know, not by the klalim of money, but by the klalim of Iser V'heter. Anyways, the Shach in Tak B'Kohen says something else. The Shach in Tak B'Kohen says, although he says it again on the, a little bit more in a pragmatic way, he says it's a din in the Tnai Ksuva, that there's a relationship between Iser, Isha Labala, and Ksuva. That whenever there's the Iser, Isha Labala, there should be no, you know, Gvias HaKsuva. And again, I think you could say the same idea based on what I just said a second ago in a more fundamental way. But either way, if you take the Shach's view, so then there might be this ripple effect. In other words, what you're doing is Shavi Nafshe Chaticha Di Yisura. But once there's no Heter Isha Labala, then Mimela, you know, that has impact on other things. Not because we believe it and therefore it's an application, but because even though we don't necessarily believe it, it's a factual consequence, you know, of this new reality, if you will. But anyways, all things being equal, the bigger question that we're trying to deal with is, if Shavya Nafsha is Ischaibos, then aside from these interconnections, you know, where one pulls the other, and those are going to be more rare and more difficult to justify, so mostly we're going to limit... We're mostly going to limit Shavya. On the other hand, if we believe it somewhat, and that too needs to be qualified, so then, on the contrary, our default is that if we believe something, we should be consistent in applying it. The only way that you're going to be inconsistent in applying it is to start invoking concepts like Palgina Nemanus. Palgina Nemanus, as opposed to Palginim Dibure, even, there's a sugya in the second parak and all over Shas, really, in Yavamos and, you know, in Makos, but certainly in the second parak of Ksuvas. We are familiar with the idea in Sanhedrin of Palginim Dibure, right? Ploni Ravani Lertzoni, so we say Palginim Dibure, because, you know, Baal is Kiishto, or, you know, or Ploni Baal Ishti, because Ploni Ravani, so. We don't believe him about himself because they're in Mesa Matzma Russia, but we say Palgina Dibur. Palgina Dibur means literally you edit what he says, and you edit out the parts that we can't accept as Edas. The idea of Palgina Nemanus is an offshoot of that. The Xos made the phrase, I think, more famous. I'm not sure, Rabbi Kiveger made the phrase more famous, but the idea is that it's selective Nemanus. As we believe it with regard to A, we don't believe it with respect to B. That A and B can be topics, applications, in other words, and A and B can sometimes be people. But the idea behind it is that even though truth would seem to be, you know, authentic truth is universal, right? If it's true, it's true. That's the nature of what truth is, right? It's a certain intrinsic objective. You know, reality that has a certain compelling force. But if we're talking about thresholds of evidence, then we can totally understand that, you know, that the threshold for evidence is different. And this is certainly true in the world of halacha. It could be in other systems too. You know, we know it's true in some other systems, right? You know, let's say in American law, right, to reach a verdict in a capital case is different than to reach a verdict in a monetary case, right? And that's true in many legal systems. Certainly it's true in halacha. So there are many types of nemanus, as we know. And we're going to be discussing some of them. But, you know, eid echad b'yisurim, eid echad b'shvua, nemanus ha'av al abbas, and of course, you know, eid echad be'egla rufa, eid echad be'misas habal. In some cases, when we talk about different levels of nemanus, we're talking about subjects, In other cases, we're talking about levels of namonis. So if I say about eid echad, you have a single eid echad, he comes, we accept him, you know, in one way for isurim, in another way for egla rufa and gerushin and sota. The same eid echad, assuming he's an eid echad kasher. So there we're talking about distinguishing between applications, areas of halacha. In some cases, I say it's a different level of namonis, the difference between eid echad. Let's say possible, and then Eidachod Kacher, possibly. Even in Isurim, certainly, you know, when it comes to things like Shavua, because we certainly accept the view that Eidachod B'Shavua is only Ksherim. Nemonasa Aval Abbas, right, that's a different level. Shav Yenafshe, we have to try to figure out whether or not that isn't also a level of Nemonus of some sort. In any case, normally, as I say, belief is universal, and the way to justify that it's not is to suggest that that different applications require different thresholds, and that's very reasonable. But the idea that there might be a spillover is much easier to accept. In other words, since the onus is to prove, when you believe, you're talking about a belief, the onus is to prove, you know, that it shouldn't apply. Whereas the onus in the case of the Skybus is to prove that it should apply, you know, beyond the narrow case. So the point is that all of these issues in the Gemara that we already discussed need to be looked at from these points of view, plural. In other words, whether it is Hefsed Ksuva and its connection to Iser Alabal, that's one. The next level is Svek Steka, right, which is the original point of the Gemara. The Gemara says that you know, if we're talking about a regular woman, not an Eishes Kohen, not Pchusin Baskev Elshanim, so what if he says Pesach Pasuach Matzasi? It's a Svek Sveka. And the Yerushalmi seem to have some suggestion that even in Svek Sveka we say Shavi Nash. Now again, here it's a little bit different. The point is that even if you believe it, you know, if you believe the fact, you know, what does it produce? Nothing more than a Svek Sveka. So here's a great example where on a nemonus level you're going to be limited. Nemonus for Shavi Nafsha is going to be more expansive and more limiting, right? Always. It's going to be more expansive for the reason that we just discussed, and that is because truth you know, should apply to all areas default. It's going to be more limiting because it has to achieve some sort of stature in the case. So if for some reason, right, the facts, you know, don't produce that result, for example, Svek Sveka, then you're stuck. Or there's going to be another limiting factor on Birur in Shavya, and that, of course, we'll get to it soon enough, although we've already made reference, and that's if it's countered by some other compelling force. Because what you might just say is, well, this is all well and good in a vacuum, and you know, when it has competition in terms of establishing truth, competition in truth is a struggle for existence. You know, competition in Ischaibos may just be completely irrelevant because we don't believe it anyway, and it's not about its objective, you know, veracity. It's just about, you know, your ability to impose upon yourself. So impose upon yourself all you want. Again, we may qualify that, but that's the it's a double-edged sword, the relationship between the expansiveness of Shavya, let's say, and the nature of Shavya. The more you think Eidus or Hiskaibus, it's not all you know, more or less, it's going to depend. So the factor of spillover, Hefsik Suba, is one where a Shavya based on some sort of nemonus is more expansive, and Skybus is more limited. A Shavya, in terms of Svek Sveka, is the exact opposite. It's where nemonus isn't going to produce anything. But if we understand that by saying, he's basically saying, I'm squeamish, I don't want to live with her, and I don't want to take this chance, or, you know, I refuse to have anything to do with her. So the fact that he's formulated in a Svek Sveka fashion, but he knows what that means, and he's still, you know, insisting on it, might very possibly be Iskaibus. Unless you want to say that the formulation in Iskaibus is still Ma'akev you, which may be true too. We'll get back to that. And then, of course, the third area is Kimle, which again is part of the Shaka of Tari of the Gemara. The Gemara says, well, I would have thought that Shavya wouldn't apply to Pesach Pasuch Matzasi because Lo Kimle. And then the Gemara says, Kamash Malan. And then the question is, what is the Kamash Malan? And the Shita Kubetzis thinks that that's part of the Maklokes HaRishonim in the Sugya. So if the Kamash Malan is that he is Kimle, so then, you know, there's nothing more to say. But if the Kamash Malan is you don't need Kimle, so that is huge. That echoes, that parallels what we just said about Sveksveika. Namely, if he believes it, so even if he's low Kimle, maybe that's enough. But if he, you know, is just telling you the facts and we're supposed to go from there, and we just, you know, we believe him from a Shavya point of view, but we just don't think he's a bar hachi, right, to be making this assessment, then basically we should be ignored. Again, it should be the victim of the higher standard of objective, some sort of objective truth. So again, the machlokas about Kibble is a very important machlokas. In addition, what we found last time is that there is also debate regarding Migu and Chazaka. The Ritva has this idea that in theory, a Migu, right, should neutralize Shavya. Now, they have Shavya and Asha, but, you know, he says, Pesach Matzasi, and she has a Migu, Migu di Ba Yamra Mukaseitz, then we would really believe her, even though he's saying Shavya. So, then the Ritva explains that, you know, this particular Migu is ineffective for practical reasons. But it sounds like, in principle, that Migu Keneged Shavya, at least that Migu, would be relevant and maybe maybe even decisive. So that's a double chiddush, right? Number one, it assumes that Migu is, I'm sorry, it assumes that Shavya is not operating on the level of the Schaibus, but on the level of Bepashtas, but on the level of some sort of the Birur. And it also assumes that Migu overrides Shavya. As you have two Birurim, right? It's always a tough thing. How do you know? Right. What about Migu Keneged Chazaka? Right. Migu Keneged Chazaka, we know, is a Safek in the Gemara in Bava Basra and Daf Hei Amud Aleph. A person has a Migu that he paid, you know, off a loan, but Toch Zmano. So the Gemara there says, oh, it's Migu Keneged Chazaka. That's a Bayit L'Yefshita. Then the Rishonim debate there in Bava Basra and Daf Hei, and especially in the second parak of Ksuvis, and of course elsewhere, there seems to be conflicting evidence on that issue. You know, all over Shas. You know, who's the winner in Migu, you know, Keneged Chazaka? Or maybe this depends what kind of Migu it is, or maybe it depends what kind of Chazaka is, or maybe it depends on the interaction between the particular Migu and the Chazaka. We have a full range of answers. Again, not our topic in Rishonim. I'm only mentioning it now because according to that one view in the Ritva here, you have Migu Keneged Shavya. So that's an interesting parallel. When you have lesser levels of Birur and Nemanus and they clash with each other, what is the hierarchy, you know, under those circumstances? But at least that one presentation in the Ritva seems to be assuming that this is all relevant. In general, the Ritva, you know, seems to go back and forth on this issue, but some of the formulations in the Ritva are, you know, about Namanus, and they really sound like he taking seriously the notion that Shavya is some sort of a Biru. On the other hand, the easier answer to the question would be that either Shavya, like the Gemara's language was, that Shavya Pes Pasuach is Kishne Edim Dami. Now, the Gemara said that on Daf Tesam and Aleph in a very specific context, when he was talking about, you know, Kinu Yastira. It's not true that only Kinu Yastira, you know, is Osir Yisha Avala. You know, Shnayim Edim can do that too, and Pesach Patsuach is Kishnayim Edim Dami. So, in context, the Gemara isn't really equating Pesach Patsuach and Shnayim Edim. It's a saying that, like Shnayim Edim, you don't have to always go the route of Kinu Yastira. But if you want to focus on the linguistic point in the Gemara, and some Achronim do, So then it's also a very high standard. You were saying that it's Kishnayim Eidim. Maybe that, you know, really influenced the Xos. Anyways, we'll get back to the Xos a second. So, right. So you might have said that even if there is a Migu, Shavian Apsha trumps a Migu. It's just Kishnayim Eidim. Or at least if it isn't in terms of the strength of the Biror, at least it is in terms of the subjective worldview, let's say, of the person, you know, for whom Shavya is is applying, as we'll get back to. The other possibility, of course, is to say that Migu doesn't work at all, as we said before, because this is about his kindness. And that's the easiest answer to give. Similarly, the Rishonim have this discussion about Chazaka. Let's say you have Dam Besulin. Right. So, and there seem to be two formulations of this in the Rishonim too, like the Ritva and the Ran, and some of the other Rishonim. So, how compelling is the, you know, presence of Dam Besula? At minimum, it's a very strong Chazaka, which indicates that she was a Besula. So he's saying Pesach Pasuch Matzasi, and she was a Beula, and the Dam Besulim is telling a different story. The question is there at least some outside possibility of interpreting, you know, it was Dam Tzipor, or Dam Natsadim, Dam Maka, you know, things of that sort. So this already, there seems to be different variations, but this is, again, a parallel to the problem of Shavya Keneged Migu, the same issue. What about, you know, other contrary indications? Again, here you might be mechalek between migu and chazaka in two ways. Number one, in terms of the strength of the contrary factor, and that, you know, is something that belongs in a bigger, against a big framework. What is stronger generally, you know, migu or chazaka? We just noted that the sugya of Avasra Pehemet Aleph talks about migu keneged chazaka, but it's much more complicated than that. We also know that, you know, when it comes to chazakos or robes, ein olchem b'mamon acharov. Then there's a debate in the Rishonim whether we say migu, you know, lahotzi, or not. The Bali Tosis generally don't say migu lahotzi, and the Ramban and many of the Chachmei Sfarad, you know, in Bava Metzia, and especially in Bava Basra and Ksuvis, say we do say migu lahotzi. So in general, what, you know, when you have Shavya versus Migu and you have Shavya versus Chazaka and you're trying to examine them, there are some issues you know, to discuss. There's another factor here, and that is if we're not talking about 100% in the case of Migu. So if the woman is Makhish and she has a Migu, so at least the Migu is operating, you know, as 100%. You know, you can believe it or not believe it. The question then is what value on a Biro level do you assign, you know, to this kind of amigo? But whatever it is, it is. And in the case of Chazaka or Cheskas Damim, Dam Besula, so then the question again, how seriously do we take the miut? Right. Because in a way, you have, it's not his word versus her word, and she has a stronger word based on migu, it's just the objective evidence of the chazaka. So, in a vacuum, you know, we ignore miuts and operate with you know, ruba delesa kamans, but when there's contrary evidence, it's not just that, oh, so maybe, you know, it depends again how you understand the sugya of, you know, smoch miuta. Is it really just, you know, kind of whether the miut is ki'isa or kelesa and it's the same way, or in the face of other evidence we sometimes give greater credence to more outside possibilities. As we know, there can be even situations where you know, there's no leidas hasafek based on a certain strong rove, but when there's some contrary factor or evidence, right, then we'll acknowledge that there is leidas hasafek. So a miuta, let's, for example, a miuta de miuta, or a, you know, a miuta which is normally keman de lesa, can get chozer veneer, if one could say so. I don't mean it literally, but as a factor, we can, in terms of it registering in a situation where you know, the contrary evidence, you know, makes us reassess, you know. Like we said, many times, when a person crosses the street, it's not, you don't calculate his odds. But, you know, once something happens, you know, you're not going to deny that it happened. You're not going to say, well, there was no possibility of that happening. Of course not. It happened, sadly. And then you have to say, you know, the mafreya, igalei milsa, something else. So too, when you have, you know, a rov and a miut, and then you have some other contrary factor, which leads you to think that in this case it might be that the miut is the prevailing force, so that can shift how we look at kisa kalei. That's a chiddush what I'm saying, but I think that that's true. Anyways, this is all just to explain how you might be mechalek if you wanted to line up the rishonim in boxes, and you were trying to figure out, you know, well, does everybody who thinks that in theory shavya keneged migu is treated exactly the same way as Shavya Keneged Chazaka, what I'm saying is there are a couple of good reasons to be Mechalek, although in either direction. Right? And they have to do with the interaction of these things. They have to do with the hierarchy in general of Migu and Chazaka, and they also have to do with the particular dynamic between Shavya and Chazaka and Shavya and Migu, and how absolute is the conflict or clash between. But just to get back on track, all these questions, Hefsiksuva, Kimli, Sveksveika, I forgot to mention this, Hava Mina the Gemara in Kedushin, right? That she, you know, that if he says I married you and she denies it, that there could be some sort of impact in terms of the program. We reject this Lamaskana by the Gemara and Hava Mina, good colleague between him and her. Kimli, Migu, Chazaka, all of these are debates about the scope of Shavinatka Katicha Ditsura, most of which we've already seen. And broadly speaking, they, you know, are understandable depending on the perspectives that we take. The other one, of course, is the question of two aid, which I want to speak about more. That we didn't get a chance. We mentioned it, but we didn't speak about it enough. What happens when you have Shavinafshah Haticha Disura Neged to aid? And that could take place. There could be three scenarios to think about, and I just want to pin them down in just a minute. One is just the typical one, and that is you have Shnayim Eidim and you have Shavinafshah against. And this is an issue that comes up in the Rishonim. The Be'iri has two days in Kiddushin, I think we mentioned already, and the Rimigash takes a stand on this question. I'm sorry, the Riazakein takes a stand on this question. The Tshuva Sarajba, the Mishnah Melech, quotes and elaborates. We'll see some of the details in just a minute. So I think there are three bigger questions here. One is the question per se, Shavinasha versus Shnayim Eidim. And it's interesting that some Achronim, Ksos in particular, thought that if you know, you were to take the radical view that Shavinach Chatech Disura is Birur or Hodos Balvin in the Mominus side is Birur Gamor, that it's Edus Gemura Le'inyan Atzmo, that you should treat it like Trey or Trey, literally. Not less and not more, but the same. And that's something to think about. The other two issues that come up where we find Chilukim are if the Shnayim, doesn't matter if the Shnayim are part of the story, that's one. And number two, does it matter in terms of his Chazar? Let's say he wanted to back out of his Shavinafsha Chaticha, the Isur. Again, the first case meaning the Shavinafsha story is told on the basis of Eidim. This really presupposes something else, which we're going to discuss in just a minute, and that is whether Shavinafsha matters, whether or not there's a direct Shavinafsha or a Shavinafsha based on his personal you know, acceptance of some evidence that otherwise is lacking in threshold level. That's of course the Sugi and Kedushin, which we're going to discuss in just a bit. But the point is, if I tell a story that you know, 2 Adim told me that that there was an act of betrayal, you know, that Ishto Zinsa, and they told me, and I believe them. And then the 2 Adim themselves come along and they say, we never said it. Right. So does that make a difference? As will you say, assuming that you say Shavi Nafsha even Keneged Shnayim Adim, will you say even Keneged Shnayim Adim when the Shnayim Adim themselves deny it? Okay. Not that they change their mind either, but they deny that they ever said it. Okay, so that's one issue to talk about. And the other issue, as I say, that's the second issue that we're, that's per se that. And the third one is in terms of the requirement of an amasla, which we'll also talk about in a minute. The Gemara says in Ksubis that you can get out of a Shavi Nafsha, or the equivalent of Shavi Nafsha, with an amasla. But if you give a good coherent explanation about why you originally told this story and were, you know, mischayev, but now you want to explain that you didn't really mean to be mischayev. That's called an amasla. We'll read it inside in just a second. So the question is, you seemingly always need an amasla to get out of Shavi Nafshe. Do you need it even keneged when it's an amasla that works keneged Shnayim Adim? Or maybe, once it's keneged Shnayim Adim, so if you insist on it, we'll apply it, but maybe you don't need an amasla, you know, to retreat from it. Again, that's these are issues that the Mishnah Melech, both of which the Mishnah Melech brings up. So this is one area that we need to explore. We'll discuss the details in just a minute. And I say the other one is the Gemara itself on Samach Vav Amud Aleph in Kiddushin, right, which is where you have seemingly the equivalent of Shavi Nafshe, but once removed. Typical Shavi Nafshe is Ha'omer Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, right? Or a woman who says, she says that she was Mizana, or she says that she's a Grusha, whatever it is, she makes a definitive statement about her activities or her status. And or he makes some statement about his activities and status. But what if what you have is a less than the threshold piece of evidence that is believed by one of the parties? So that's we can call that a secondhand Shavi Nafshe Chaticha D'Yisura. Right? Does that make a difference or not? So it's an interesting question on two levels, right? Both the Mishnah Melech Ha'ara that I mentioned before, namely, what happens if you change your mind, supposedly, I'm sorry, what happens if the person who you're quoting or invoking, tells a different story? That's one circumstance. Is it possible that even without that, for example, the requirement of an amasla or the status of a second-hand Shavi Nafsha might be different than a first-hand Shavi Nafsha? Okay, with respect to, for example, issues in addition to amasla, like spillover impact. Okay, might you say that this is a more tenuous Shavia, or maybe this Shavia, works in a different way? Okay, so these are the issues that I want to explore, and then I want to look at the Gemara in the Darim and the Rambams, because the Gemara in the Darim and the Rambams speak about the spillover into other people or into other areas for the same reason, including Onshin and other things. These are the things that we still have left to discuss. Okay, so let's look at the Gemara in Kiddushin just for a couple of minutes. Avram, you want to... you have it there? And Samach Vav Amud Aleph? What? Okay, before I go into that, let me just remind you all of one other thing that we've done already, and that is So far, again, we've been explaining in broader terms that Shavya is about either, you know, broadly speaking his chayvus, or broadly speaking amot. And just to add, we only had two shiurim, but the other thing that we developed so far is that we need to fine-tune what we mean by ischaivus and what we mean by birur or namatis. So on the ischaivus side, what we tried to show was that the marit and the xos and some of the achronim are convinced that this is just pure ischaivus. And, that according to their point of view, it's ischaivus, and it's basically reading his mind what he wants to be mischaiv about. That's why they're bothered, whether or not you need hafla, and how you can get out of it with a masla, as opposed to, hataras nadarim. And the sos is bothered by how you can ever say things like kola omar lola visiki loma lo paraiti, because in the end of the day, were we catching him on what he said? He wants to be mischaiv. He wants to be mischaiv for this. He doesn't want to be mischaiv for that. And that's all very consistent. What I was trying to suggest was that there is a way to bring the different perspectives on Shavya, which are very, very clearly discussed in the Rishonim. Again, Ritva Chidugubetzis is very explicit, both linguistically and otherwise about these questions. There's a way to bring both extremes closer together. And when you do that, of course, the methodologically, what you also gain is you're able to explain more phenomena. In other words, things which are very clear cut and stark on one side or another become a little bit more ambiguous. So on the ischaivus side, I think it's possible to suggest that while this is a form of ischaivus, it's ischaivus to a certain threshold or standard. I would say two different ways. Either ischaivus to a certain scenario, or hischaivus to a certain standard. Hischaivus to a scenario, by which I mean, is that, he didn't say, I hereby proclaim, that, my wife is off limits, to me. Even if this is a form of hischaivus, that's already in stage two. That's in the application stage. His hischaivus takes the form of a story. And therefore, the story becomes part of the chalos of the ischaibus. Now again, whether that is, more pragmatic or more, in a lumdish way, I prefer the second, but it might be the first. Meaning, when he tells a story, instead of reading what I'm suggesting at minimum, unlike the Xos and Marit and so on, is that we don't just read his mind and say he means, i.e., and therefore, the story basically part is only what gets you, to that consequence. That's what I'm rejecting, according to both of these, or all three of these views. What I am saying is that this takes the form of a story, and therefore the story matters. Now, whether the story matters purely pragmatically, meaning his ischaivus was to this scenario. And not more and not less, and that can have kula consequences, and it can have chumra consequences. Chumra consequences, by which I mean kol omar lo levisa ki lo amar lo paraiti, right? Meaning it can get him into deeper trouble than he may even have envisioned or imagined. But so what? That's what his chayvus is. That's on the pragmatic side. What I mean by the lumda side is that, it just like a person can be mischayev and he can take a neder, so maybe al pidin he can commit himself to a scenario. I mean, it isn't just that our mind reading doesn't skip the step to the consequences. It focuses purely on the scenario. What I'm saying is that for the same reason that you can commit yourself to a consequence, you can commit yourself to a scenario, and therefore, we hold you to the scenario. And that's kind of that's the hischaivus part, in a way, is a shiur. You can create a hischaivus in halacha, and an isur v'heter, and even a neder, and therefore you can be mischaiv yourself to a certain, scenario. Okay. Either way, this will explain almost all this will neutralize almost all the primary objections against this approach. The step beyond that, which is bridges the gap even more, is the step that argues that he can also be mitzchayiv himself to a certain threshold. Okay, and again, here I don't just mean that; I also mean the consequence. But I'm also kind of suggesting that legally the mechanism itself is important. In other words, the Torah allows for me, you know, to protect me and to protect all of Klal Yisrael to aid him, you know, or has, you know, mechanisms about how to, you know, authenticate or verify certain, you know, events and scenarios. But if I want to be mischayev myself to a lesser standard, then I can do that. But then al pidin, what it really means is, again, on a pure consequence level or also on a chalos level, I'm not sure, same safek as before, but just like, you know, on my scenario, a safek, what that now means is that for me, I'm accepting these. Now, it doesn't mean that objectively we believe it or even subjectively we believe it. It just means that, you know, his commitment is on the level of proof that he, in this scenario, requires. Not more, not less. Now, in terms of spillover for other people, none of this helps. The spillover question, in other words, you know, you can get too fancy sometimes when you modify or moderate things, even if you think you're doing the right thing. You don't want to ruin the whole, you know, distinction. You don't want to make it too, you know, ambiguous. But the point I want to make is that even these two moderations, you know, whether it's 2A and 2B or 3A and 3B, it doesn't make a difference, even they are still operating at the level of the schaibus. So in terms of spillover into other areas, to other people, I should say, that's still not going to work, except with the intertwined de facto connections. Okay. On the other hand, in the other duality, the other, you know, extreme, the idea that we're dealing with some sort of modus and virer, so here there are two things to say. Number one is, what is the qualitative level of the level and of the character of the nemanus, meaning. In its most extreme, you have the Xos, as we discussed, who says that Chavi Nacha Chaticha De Surah is literally Eidos. And that Yomar Ki, who's there, you know, is Koveya, that the Psul of Eidachon, and the Psul of Karov, and the Psul of Russia, all of these things don't apply, you know, when it comes to Eidos Bitchum Atzma. Now, he takes this literally. You can see it from his discussions. I gave you some Simon Lama Dalid, I believe, to look at, right? Lama Dalid Dalid. But again, he has it in Mem, and he has it in Pei. He has it all over the place. This is like a very big theme in Exos. So he really, really believes that Shavinat Shechaticha Di Yisura, or Hodos Bodin Kemedim Dami, is objective, full Eidos. So why isn't there total spillover? The answer is because it's Eidos Bitchum Atzma. It's Hodos Baldin, to the extent that he's a Baldin. The second that it spills over into somebody else's life, right, it's no longer, then that person is protected by the need for Eidos, you know, to exclude a Baldavar, a Nogeya, right, a Karov Liatzmo, a Russia, a Neidachad, you know, etc. you don't have to go so far as the Xos. Right. What you might say is that this isn't Eidos, even though the Gemara did use the expression Pesach Pasuach Kishneidim Dami, as we said, that's in a context. Maybe the Xos took it very seriously, although he doesn't quote that, I have to say. At least I don't recall that he does, not Simon Lavadala and Pei. But I don't know if he never quotes it, but that's not what he's basing it on. But certainly you could say that's a Melitza, which, you know, is very focused on a particular consequence. But either way, the point is that you don't need to say Eidos Gemura in order to say that there's a Birur. You don't even need to say Eidos Gemura in order to establish that there's an objective Birur. Right? You might say there's a Birur, but it's less than Eidos. So, for example, the issue that we're going to discuss in just a second, which is Shnayim Eidim, it's actually much, ironically, as we said before, it's much easier to dismiss Shavya b'makom edim if it's a biror than if it's a schaivos. Because as a biror, it just can't compete. But according to the Ksosa, can compete, just that it should be never, shouldn't win, it should just be trey or trey. So we have other birurim, right? We have Erechot, we have Nemonis Aval Bito, you know, we have Migu and we have Chazaka, and so on and so forth. These are objective birurim. So since that's the case, you can have an objective birur that falls short of Eidos. And why maybe Shavya has to, you know, be seen in that light. So too, one might raise the question whether or not maybe it's a birur, but not an objective birur, but more of what I was calling a subjective birur. And by that I mean that for his worldview and his reality, you know, we believe this for him. That's different than saying we don't believe it, but, you know, we leave him alone. We believe it for him, we just don't believe it for anyone else. Now that seems peculiar, but it isn't really. Meaning, Adam Neman Alatsmo, Yosem Me'aish, yeah.
So I was wondering, just for a minute, that it's not even that we believe it for him, it's that if he thinks that that's the reality, then he obviously has to be noted that way. I mean, we force him to hold up to his own standards of his perception,
okay,
of reality.
But, well,
isn't that his time? It's not a skyless per se. He's not being misguided himself. But if you think that this is what the case is,
I mean, he doesn't have a suffix.
Right.
So maybe it depends on this point. Meaning, I think there are two ways to say this. One is, well, he doesn't have a suffix.
Right.
And when a person does, when a person has a suffix, so there are rules about how we, you know, how we follow through with that. You know, what do we do? How do we resolve sfeikos? But he's saying this is vada. So for him, there's no suffix. That kind of like the Pnei has such a formulation, and I think if that's the case, then basically what we're saying is, you know, we don't believe it necessarily. We don't even believe it for him. But since from his point of view, and to the extent that it's personal, you know, he doesn't have a suffix, we don't interfere with his life, and on the contrary, we don't not just interfere. We tell him, or the halacha is that he should be consistent with, you know, his view of reality, which is, I think, what you're saying. I don't think you have to say that only. I think you could also say that, similar to what we were saying before, but in a totally different way of applying it, and that is that a lot of the dinim of birur are due to the fact that they affect, you know, the entire population. That's why we have the books. You know, Moshe V'Aaron, you know, Shnei Achim Heim, you know, the Gemara says in Bava Basra, but it doesn't matter. So, not because Chas V'Shalom we have any suffix that Moshe and Aaron are gonna, you know, gonna lie, and probably, you know, it's not because they're blinded by their, you know, personal interests and can't help themselves, you know, either. Let's assume that for the moment, you know, Moshe and Aaron were, you know, able to, you know, overcome that kind of thing. Doesn't make a difference. In the end of the day, we need to protect the population, you know, from Moshe and Aaron. Not really from Moshe and Aaron, but from the, based on the low plug of Moshe and Aaron. And therefore, you know, it's like, I always like to quote that Rambam, the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, who says that, you know, even a divine system, by definition, can't work out every single case, every single application cannot be, you know, perfect. You're not going to claim there'll never be a miscarriage of justice, because any system, even if it's a perfect divine system, when it's applied over time and place, you know, there'll always be crazy cases where it doesn't work. And the best, most efficient, even divine system that you can ever want is the one that protects the most people over the most, you know, over the greatest span of time and place and so on. So the point is, that's why you need low plugs, even Doraisa low plugs, like Moshe V'Aaron. I mean, listen, like Moshe and Aaron really know the information in this case, and there is going to be a miscarriage of justice on some objective, you know, level, but it doesn't make a difference, because we're protecting all of Klal Yisrael, the Dorei Doros. That's part of what a legal system, there's a bureaucratic, you know, and an administrative, you know, low plug side you know, even of a best and most efficient and most idealistic, you know, system. And there are certain dinim that result. I mean, again, you know, there are murderers who go free, you know, clearly, because the greater ideal of, you know, not convicting people incorrectly, you know, is part of the shikul. It's part of, you know, the balance of considerations. But the point is that whenever you deal with something, let's say I can deal with something, you know, without worrying about, you know, the broader issues, right? And so then maybe I can design a more perfect, you know, kind of a system. So I think there are two examples of that. One is Pshara, which we'll speak about next year. Some views of Pshara. There's a debate about Pshara, let's say it now, you know, whether Pshara is more just Shalom and, you know, a concession to Shalom, or it's, you know, a way of tweaking or fine-tuning, you know, the system, you know, without having to worry about the low plugs. So you can actually get a better, you know, result because, you know, you've taken away the low plugs. You have two people, they've agreed that, you know, to suspend some of the more objective requirements in this case and to go for fairness. The fairness should be based on the Choshen Mishpat rules. Anyways, that's one scenario. The other scenario is things like Adam Neman Alatzmo Yoser B'mei Aish or Shavi Navshe Chati Chati Yisura. What we might say is that, you know, we don't necessarily, you know, it's to give our Gushpanka that we believe it, to say that it's, you know, a Biror, we can't do that because it doesn't have the protections. But, you know, since this affects him, so if he wants to drop the protections, and, you know, what we might say is that, you know, we're going to go along with his view of truth. Okay, but that's not his chaybus. You know, we believe it for him. We just can't believe it for others because the others need the protection. Now, if you take the view that, you know, Shabi is some sort of an objective biror, whether it's full ages or something less, but it's still biror, then, as I said before, normally you would expect spillover. Like, why not? The Ksos is going to have to answer that question in a very formal way each time. And that is, again, I think for these same reasons, by the way, just that for him it's objective, so it's a little bit, meaning Inyan Atzmo, these are the relaxed, objective Eidos rules, but it's no longer Inyan Atzmo anymore, right? Obviously, when you speak about you know, a more subjective kind of Nemanus, or it's not a Suffolk, you know, for him, so then we've kind of shifted things just a little bit in terms of the question of impacting on others. So if we think it's objective, whether it's the objective Eidos of the Ksos or, you know, an objective, if lesser than Eidos, you know, something that can rival but maybe beat the Migus, the Chazakas, the Namanus Ha'av Al-Abbas, etc. So then, at least what you might say is, okay, so what we now need to figure out, and this is the key, I mentioned this last time also, we need to figure out whose Din Torah this is. And whose file is open now. And, you know, whose Kabbalah Sages this is. Because we believe it, right? So if the information's in the system, you know, we might even use it, right? The problem is it can't get into the system. It's a Kabbalah Sages problem, or maybe more. But it doesn't get into the system to begin with, you know, if it's not about him. But let's say it's really 99% about him, or, you know, 90% about him. And it's in the system, you know. So what about then applying it to the spillover, assuming that there isn't a separate tick? So again, let's say there's some issue regarding, I guess we'll take the examples that we're talking about, Isha and Baal, right? And he has his version of the truth here, or his scenario of based on Shavi Navshe Chati Chati Yisura. And obviously there are two people involved in this case. But how do we look at these two people? And how do we look at them with regard to Heter Ishul Bala And how do we look at them with regard to ksuva? And how do we look at them with regard to, like, some other things? Like, if she's an Eishes, Kohen, you know, what about the Truma consequences of all this? Or, you know, if she's, in the future wants to be married to a Kohen, you know, after he dies or divorces or whatever it is. So the question of these cases are, like, how do we look at this information? Is this primarily about the first case, or about the Shavi Nafsha case? And then these are just, it's in the file, or does it get transferred to the other people's file, or two people's files get opened, at the very beginning of the Din Torah? Okay, so I like to use these, visual, intellectual visual images, but it doesn't matter how you can use your own. It doesn't make a difference. I'm just trying to highlight, in other words, how do we look at this case? Like, even according to the Ksos, right? So the more we look at it as, the primary nidon, right? The primary baldavar, right, is this person, and we really believe objectively what was said. So the possibility of, and these are just like, the ripples, the consequences, the consistent applications, it's much easier to explain. On the other hand, if we say, oh no, there are two Bali Dvarim here, right? And maybe there are two different areas of halakha here. This is a Gaber issue, and it's also a subject matter issue. Like, is there a Trumas file, or a sub, file on Truma in the Kahuna, file cabinet? Right? How does this all work out? So these formal questions are going to be critical to applying Shavi Nafsha Chatichin Yisur to the spillover issues. On the other hand, again, the more we think that this is just about, he doesn't have a doubt, so he's supposed to live his life Kimi Shein Lo, Safek, according to his view of reality. Or we believe him with regard to himself. We don't have the luxury of ever believing him as far as anybody else is concerned. So then you're still going to be very strict about denying any kind of overlap. On the other hand, if you hold like the Ksos, so basically what I've been describing as different files, whether it's on a people level or an application level, really could be also described in terms of the phrase I mentioned before, which is the phrase of Palginan Nemanus. Meaning, what does Palginan Nemanus mean? It means that this isn't just a consequence. This is a different area, this is a different file, or it's a different area of application. And the thresholds are different, or the Bale Dvarim, are different. So these are things that need to be established and clarified. So just to sum up, the different perspectives on Hischaivus and the different perspectives on Nemanus are quite a range. In the end of the day, there's still a huge difference between Hischaivus and all the forms of Nemanus. There are Kulas and there are Chomras. Okay. So let's discuss the Gemara in Kedushin Daf Samach Vav Amud. I don't have so much more time for today, but let's discuss that for a minute. So what does the Gemara here say? Avram? Yeah. So, and what's the view of Abaya?
Either that, but I guess either that there is
Dover Shabbat
or that even if there's...
Well, probably not.
Right, but that's not the mechanism we're using here.
The Dover Shabbat probably doesn't apply to
Znus. Right.
It applies to other things. Maybe Kedushin and Gerushin and where you need Eide Kiyum and things of that sort. But maybe Ishto Zinsa is a different kind of an edus, or maybe that the status of an Isha, you know, Shezinsa is already a status in the Gavra. He's being made about her, not it's necessarily what she did. It's because of what she did, obviously. And therefore, that would be, an Einechod would be appropriate for that. But okay, that's not our topic right now. But Rava said, Neman, he extends Davar Shebe'erva, which is understandable. Even though, again, it's here we're dealing with Edei Biror, not with Edei Kiyum. We talked about, you know, in our sugya, the Habamina that Ein Isha Naser Sobala Edei Kinu Yastira is a, as Tosus understood, is a kind of Edei Kiyum idea, but we don't accept that. And but the threshold is one of the Ein Dover Shebe'erva Pachas Mishnayim, and therefore we should dismiss this completely. Okay, Amar Avaya. Meaning that as long as it's not made possible, you'd be believed. Okay, Barava. Oh. So now Rava introduces something new. What's that? I mean, Rava also will agree that there's a situation where he should respond by dismissing her, right? But it's in the situation, this is what he adds, Imahemelach Kibetre. So Imahemelach Kibetre is an interesting, again, an interesting formulation, and the question is, what is it? Right? Because if he doesn't say Imahemelach, what do you mean Imahemelach Kibetre? Right? So the truth is that the Gemara itself, there's no reason to think that this is Shavi Nafshe Chaticha Di Yisura. The Gemara doesn't use the expression Shavi Nafshe Chaticha Di Yisura, right? But some of the Rishonim do. I mean, you might have thought that this is just a question of it's almost like a second hand, as we said. So the second hand can be better or can be worse, right? Because it comes from a different source, and the question is, what level of credence do you assign that source? You could say that's not the sugya of Hischaibus or Shavi Nafsha. Hischaibus or Shavi Nafsha always depend on his own knowledge, his own first-hand knowledge or claim. Right? This is a second-hand claim. So that's point number one. And yet, a number of the Rishonim of the opinion that this is a Shavi Nafsha Chaticha Di Yisura. We also understand why. Then the Neman Kibetre is also fascinating, because the question is how literal do you take that? So, for example, if you were to take the view that this is pure Hischaibus, right, so why does it have to be Neman Kibetre? Just say he's Neman. I believe him. I'm a Safek. Right, Neman Kibetre, again, so you could say it's a Melitza Bialma. What I mean is that, you know, I don't want to make more of the question than it is. Meaning, what I mean is that, you know, according to the strict requirements of the halacha, right, only shtayim edim are posel here. So if I want to be mischayiv atzmi, right, what I'm saying is, you know, it's true there aren't shtayim edim, but just like if there were shtayim edim, I'm mischayiv myself. And that's all the Gemara means. Right? And then you could explain pure mischayivus. Of course, if you say that you know what you require in Shavi Nafsha is Eidus Gemura, Shavi Nafsha, you know, Pesach Pasua Kishnayim Eidim Dami, and without that, we'll take a Ksos, a strict constructionist, you know, Ksos point of view. So then the words you know, Kibetre are very, very powerful. Again, Ksos doesn't quote this, but you know, might want to quote it, meaning it has to be Kibetre. Because we're talking about, it's Shavi Nafsha only works when it's Eidus Gemura. Yeah.
Could it be that Kibetre is sort of like a sheer in how serious he is about his Hittite book? Like that I really I want to be machayev myself here, and so I actually believe this thesis, and I want to live up to it.
Right, so I mean that could be that. I think that's similar to what I said before when I was saying if we want to dismiss it, what we could just say is, listen, in order to be really osur, you know, it has to be betray. So if he's saying I'm accepting this as osur legamri, so he's accepting it as if there were betray. I think that's what you're saying. But what I would like to just add to all of this is the is the middle positions. It's more of a melitza that we don't take seriously, according to what you're saying and what I was saying before, if it's pure schaibus. And it is, but again, not problematic. And it's a perfect language for the Xos. But what I do want to say is that if you take one of the more moderate views, it works in very well as well. In other words, if what we're saying is his schaibus to a scenario, but especially, even much better, his schaibus to a standard, then this Gemara is perfect. And the truth is that the whole, you know, second-handing, you know, is less of an issue and less of a problem, too. Well, let me say that part of it as well. I mean, I think there are two issues that we need to contend with in this Gemara. One is, this is second-hand Shavya, not first-hand Shavya. Does that matter? Right? And the other is the language issue which we're raising. So again, if you take a pure Schaivus approach and it's a Melitza B'Alma, then, neither the second-hand part nor the language is going to be a problem once you assume it's Melitza V'Alma. Right? Who cares if it's second-hand? If I want to commit to it, I want to commit to it. But the fact that I don't know for sure, you know, I'm just relying on someone else, is irrelevant. Because even when I claim I do know for sure, it's not because we believe me in any way. It's because I can do whatever I want. So I can do whatever I want now, too. Right? But, frankly, if we take the view that Shavya is a hischaibus, but to a standard, right? Or even to a scenario, but especially to a standard, so then the language becomes much, for either one, but especially for the second one, becomes much more compelling. Because that's exactly what he's saying. He's saying, I believe, you know, my story is that she was Mazana, you know, and I believe that like it's a Kevetre. You know, even more importantly, he's an Eid Echad, and Eid Echad doesn't have the ability to be Oser Isha Labala, but in this particular case, I'm raising the standard, I'm accepting Eid Echad, I'm being mischayiv that Eid Echad to me is kebetre. Right? Instead of saying, you know, it's a totally different meaning, basically. Nemanalai kebetre. In other words, on the schaibus level, when I say Nemanalai kebetre, what I'm saying is what you said before, pure schaibus, meaning, you know, I believe what they're saying as if they were to Edim, that's how much I believe it. Whereas according to the view that his chaibus is to a standard, and that's the chiddush of Shavya, so that's not the point. What I'm really saying is, I know there's only Eid Echad, but my chaibus here is to treat the Eid Echad kishnayim Eidim. And that can be his chaibus too. That's a totally different idea. Now on the moderate other side of it, again, if it means, legabe atzmo, Lagabe divrei atzmo his chaibus, you know, hodos baldin is kedim dami. Okay, so if you take the Xos's view, there is still a bit of a chiddush here. In that, so is this a second class shavya or first class shavya? Right, the more that objectively, right, you want to establish that this is edus. So that's an interesting question. It's legabe atzmo and his eschaibus, but it's not his edus. So the nemanalai kibetre here may really have to mean that he believes it. In other words, is it enough for him to say nafkamina lahalacha? Does he have to accept the person kibetre, or does he really in his heart of hearts have to believe that this is kibetre? I'm not, it's Svarim Shablaim, you have no way of gauging it, but I'm just asking in the, conceptually. Again, Moshe Lamad Avadoma, I think I mentioned this last time too, you know, we have a concept of Lididi Shavali, right, for like, you know, pigeon a bed. Mars is in Kedushin that, you know, that you can accept something that's objectively worth less than five slime for pigeon a bed if you say Lididi Shavali. So all the Rishonim already point out, you know, don't think that that means that you're Mevater on the five and you're willing to accept less. Because that's not up to you. You can't do that. Right, if that's really what was happening, it wouldn't work. It has to be something that really, for you, personally, subjectively, is worth five. So when the guy says here, Neman alai v'seid echad kibbeit rei, right? So, you know, if we're dealing with purus kaivus, or even if we're dealing with, you know, I'm committing to, you know, that this seid echad should be kishnayim, it doesn't have to be literally, you know, that he perceives, like if you could read his mind, or just maybe just quiz him and he would be honest, what, you really think this guy, this Eid Echad is somebody you believe could betray? I mean, you have to know the guy. Or you have to be convinced by the way he says it. Or your paranoia, or your frumkeit, as the case may be, right, it's questionable whether it's frumkeit, but let's assume for the moment that it's frumkeit, right? I want to be extra cautious and careful, assuming that's a good thing in this case. So then that's I'm mekabelim kebetre. Right? But what I'm saying is if you held like the ksos, right? So there's a second hand leap. The second hand leap is not so critical in the hischaivus perspectives. But the second hand leap is important in the you know, objective or even subjective nemonus perspectives, because in the end of the day, right, he himself, what he has no safek, let's say, or in his subjective world this is his truth, it's still only an echad, right? Or it's an objective birur, albeit one less than edim, okay, that, you know. But still, that's usually based on factual knowledge, not an Eid Echad. It's still second hand, right? So it's almost like a double. And for the Ksos, this is Eidus, right? It's not his Eidus. It's not Eidus Atzmo. It's Eidus on the second hand part is huge. So what I think you need to say, you know, is that it's for these perspectives, we mean like Ladidi Shavali. Whether it's the way he's telling the story, or the fact that you know him, you know, etc., it has to literally be that Ne'eman Olav Kebetrei. Because otherwise there's a huge gap. Unless you think, maybe, and even with this, maybe, is there any nafkamina between this shavya and the typical shavya? For example, as I say, if you can get away with an amasla, right, to neutralize a regular shavya, right, do you even need an amasla in this case, since it's a second hand shavya? Well, again, so let me take that back for a second. So you might have thought, you know, you could have said that this is just not the sugya of shavya at all. Again, the Gemara doesn't call it shavya. Some Rishonim call it shavya. You might have said that it's better than shavya or worse than shavya. Right. I'm trying to explain how mostly, you know, from the Hischaivus point of view, it's identical to shavya in one way or another, although the words kibetrei have different meanings. By Neman alai kebetrei. Basically, there are three meanings to Neman alai kebetrei. Right? One is the pure schaivus way, which basically doesn't mean anything. It basically says, I'm accepting this, I'm the schaiv to this scenario, and, you know, or not even to the scenario, but, you know, whatever. The second one, which is, you know, I'm accepting this threshold Eidos as a Hiskaibos, even though I know it's not. You know, it's not the one which is, you know, Mechayiv. And then the third one for the people who are, you know, the Biru people who are saying basically that really it's Neman alike to Beitrei. I'm not treating him like a regular Eidecha. Right, but that's Lidini Shavali. I really hold this way. But just to take a step back for a moment, one could have thought that this whole sugya is not about Shavi Nafsha Chateicha D'Yisura. Right? It's about, you know, Neman alike to Beitrei, frankly. So you could think that that's less for the reasons that we've been discussing, because he doesn't know 100%. Or you could think that it's more, because the source comes from an objective basis other than him. But the problem with every Shavia is also that he's the Baal Davar, and he's a Nogea B'Davar, and so on. Here you have an Eid Echad, which, according to Abaya, right, is sufficient to be Mechayev. And then Rava comes along and says, no, but if he's whatever, Kibetrei, then that's a different story. So instead of seeing this as either an equal Shavya or a kind of a more tentative and a lesser Shavya, right, with maybe Nafkamina, Lakula, we could say that it's Lechumra, and it's not Shavya at all. Or maybe it's a different kind of Shavya Lechumra, but meaning that really it's Rava saying Abaya is right in the case of Neman alike Kibetrei. So it belongs to the world of, you know, there being flexibility, you know, in the threshold standards of evidence, but not as Shavya or less. Maybe as non-Shavya, just Neman alike Kibetrei. Oh, that's the Shavali of Eidos. So these are the different ways to read the sugya. There seems to be a machlokas, a rishonim here, whether or not the Neman alike Kibetrei, once a person says Neman alike Kibetrei, whether there's kfi or not. Right, that's the whole discussion in the Rif. And in the Rambam, right, if you look at the Rambam, Perek Chav Dalet, Halacha Yud Zayin and Yud Ches, Avram Yisrael?
No.
Mishara ishto shezinsa, o she'omer lo achas mikrovosav, o mikrovoseha, shehu maminam. Right, it's interesting. For the Rambam, it's echad mikrovosava krovoseha, right? Shehu maminam. That's what he adds. The someches dato aleim. It's a double formulation, right? Number one, he believes them. Number two, he someches dato aleim. Shezinsa ishto. Bein shay haomer ish. Bein shay hoisa isha. Right? It doesn't matter whether it's an eid kosher or an eid pasul. All this is not so obvious. Hold the samcha daita ledavar zeh, third time, shehu emes, fourth time, or maybe third time, hareza chayev lahotzi, v'aser lalavo aleha v'yiten ksuba. Okay. Bim hodalo shazinsa teitze b'lo ksuba. Then the Ram says, lefikach mashbia b'nikitas chayfetz, shelo zinsa tachtav, imra osa b'atzmo, so there are a few chidushim in this Rambam. Then in Halacha Yitches he says, "Amar lo ishto shezin satachta birtzona, ein mashkichin ledvareha, shemayne anasa ba'acher, Where does that come from? That's Adarim, right? Daftadi. Ram puts these two halachas together. Of the Ksuvasa, Ikar v'talsefes, of the Habalos, Trehoda Bezos. Be'im, Hoya Mamina, the Somech Daital, Vareha, whoa, Harezachayev Lahotziah. So, number one. The Ram puts these two halachos together. Are there any differences between them? I guess we'll have to finish this up. Next time we'll finish up the Rambams and the Gemara Nadarim. Then he adds, "Ve'ein bezdin kofin esaish legarish esishto bedavar bedvar meilu ad sheyavo shne'edim v'yaidu shazin saishto b'fneim b'rtzona v'akach kofin osa lahotzi." So there's a lot of discussion in the Nosa Kalim about how to read these two Rambams. And where is their kfiya and where is their not kfiya? And is it the same in halacha Yud Zayin and Yud Ches? And how does it fit in with the shita of the Rif? Halachas kosvu hadu rava, this is already the Magen Mishnah discusses. Halachas kosvu hadu rava v'amru hani mili b'dinei adam. Avavaba latzei sidei shemayim imahem and lakabe trei mechuyav la'afuka v'yoyav la'ksuvasa. So he's assuming that the Rambam, like the Rif, holds that this is only Bidei Shemayim and not Bidei Adam. Gamasha Kosel Lefikach Majviyam and Nikitas Chayfetz, that's the big Chiddush of the Rambam. The Rambam says somehow there's a transition in the Rambam between this case and a typical case of Shavya. Again, the Rambam says like this: Mishra Ishto Oshom Achas Mikrovosav, etc. Hova Somcha Daita Ledover Zesh, who MS or Zachaib Lahotzi, the Osser Lava Olabi, Tank Suva, Vim Hoda Shazin Satesab like Suva. And then the Ram says, Lefikach, Majbiab and Nikita Schaefet Shalozin Sataktav, Im Ra Osav Atzmo. Yachak Tigbek Suvasa. Sounds like the Rambam is Michalik between, again, first hand Shavya and second hand Shavya. But it sounds like there's a overlap between the two. It sounds like because secondhand Shavya can even lead to the loss of her ksuva, right? Or at least to him being obligated to dismiss her, therefore firsthand Shavya can trigger a shvuas nishba v'notel. And all the notes that came and say, where did this nishba v'notel come from? Masha kazal v'pikach mashpia b'nikita schefet, says the Magen Mishnah, lo nisbar li taimu. What is all this? They're just saying, where does it come from? I'm adding, and what is this transition? What's this lefikach? Okay, so we need to figure out the Rambam a little better. And is it true that the Rambam's kfiya is only bidei shamayim and not bidei adam? It doesn't sound that way in the Rambam. And it certainly sounds like the Rambam thinks that there are some differences between second-hand and first-hand Shavya, but that they're both Shavya and Lefikach. There's also an overlap, you know, between them. Okay. So the point I'm trying to make is that the Sugya and Kiddushin Samach Vav Amud Aleph is a new Sugya of Shavya. Or it's a new Sugya, put it this way. And one could have thought that it has nothing to do with Shavya, that it's just a question of Neman Alai Kibetrei. A number of Rishonim think that it's connected to Shavya. If it's connected to Shavya, so then the question is, how do we understand? Is it a regular and typical Shavya, which works fine with the Eschaibus theories? Or by virtue of the fact that it is one removed, you know, does that mean that the kibet neman alai kibet trei is something which we need to, it isn't just a melitza bialma, but it's something which needs to be objectively true more? Number one. Or is it a lesser form of shavya? Right, in which case there could be nafkamina regarding A, do you need an amasla? B, what happens keneged shnai maiden? Let's say in this case shnai maiden were to come and they were to dispute this.
Right.
Or, you know, the Echad, you know, who was the source, you know, were to come. Very hard to say that, you know, that we take literally Ne'amot Alai Kebet Trey, and then when the Trey come and they contradict it, that we just ignore it. Again, if it's pure Schaibus, whether it's to a scenario or to a standard, you know, that might be a different story. Although, again, if it's to a standard, then even then you might say that the Hakhasha of Shnai made him in general. Let me say this. The Rishonim here debate, right, the Meiri has two deos on it, and the Rimigash weighs in, and the Chum Sarajma, and the Meiri, and the Mishnah, not here, we have to stop. So I'll all these details in the Darim and the Rambams will finish up Yitz Hashem on Tuesday at 12, you said, right? But what do we need when we talk about does this Eid Echad have to be kosher? What about a masla? Even if we were to take the view that we're dealing with pure skybus, so again, if we take the Sos kind of perspective in that, which is that it's a skybus to the result and only to the results that he wants, but to the results that he wants irrespective of any objective evidence to the contrary, so then it's davar pashut that Shavi Nafshi Chatifa Yisur is going to apply even against Edim and even against, you know, Edim that he's quoting, who contradicted him. None of it should make any difference. But if the Hiskaibus is of the more moderate variety, namely Hiskaibus to a scenario, then if the Edim themselves are part of the scenario and they contradict the scenario, presumably that should undercut Shavya even of Hiskaibus. If we're talking about Shavya as a Hiskaibus to a standard, right, then even if the Edim Keneged are not part of the scenario, let's say they're objective, you know, third party Edim will come along and say this is just not true. Right. So then at minimum you should have Trey or Trey, probably even more so, you would just, you know, undermine the whole thing. Because again, the whole Schaibus is to a certain standard, but can he be Mischaib to a standard? He can't be Mischaib to a standard. Isn't Mischaibus to a standard, you know, can't, at most could tie, possibly not even that, you know, a real Shnai Maiden. So then you could explain, even according to the Schaibus perspective, the view of those Rishonim, you know, who think that Shnai Maiden, you know, would overcome. Again, if you take any view about, you know, subjective, objective, Birur, more objective the Birur, right, the more it can't ever beat, you know, Shnai Maiden. If you say, oh, he, like the Pnei Yehoshua, he doesn't have a Safek, so for him, there's no need for Eidus, and it's his life. Then possibly, you know, you can overcome Edim, but I'm not sure. Certainly, if we're talking about Edim that we believe, you know, in his worldview, and certainly if we're talking about objective Eidus, then, you know, you probably, you can never do better than Trey or Trey. Probably you're going to do worse than Trey or Trey, and you're probably going to lose. So these are the issues. I want to just go through a little shonos of the Rishonim, the Rimigash, the Meiri, the Mishnah Lamelech, the Chuvas HaRajba. So that's, I want to pick up with that, and I want to speak about there are three things left. That, Amasla, and the Rambams, in terms of the Darim and the Rambams, meaning when do we say that there's spillover effect into to other people or into other subjects, whether it's Trumos or marrying another Kohen, Onshim for himself, I mean for the subject of Shavi Nafsha, etc. So that I want to finish that up on Tuesday, and we'll also get to Mar Makomos for the Geirus topic, which I don't know if we'll start on Tuesday, but either way, you'll have Mar Makomos for that. So, unless otherwise indicated, we'll see you at 12 o'clock.
12 o'clock, yeah.
Yes.